Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Affney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. We're going to talk about the main thing, as we often do on this program, namely the threat we face from the Chinese Communist Party, and incredibly, what the Biden administration and China's other old friends, notably on Wall Street, are doing to actually intensify that threat, even as the wheels seem to be coming off the Chinese Communist Party's train. This is a moment of epic decision, and it's not being presented as such. We're simply seeing the Biden administration pursuing what appears to be a bailout strategy to help its friends in China without public discussion, let alone congressional assent. To talk about the stakes, to talk about what is afoot, to talk about the dangers of pursuing a bailout of our mortal enemy, the Chinese Communist Party, we're very pleased to have with us one of our regular featured guests, Bill Walton. He is the host these days of terrific television podcast program, The Bill Walton Show. He has a wealth of experience, notably as a master of the universe, as I'm fond of saying, on Wall Street. He ran Allied Capital, a $6 billion operation, invested a lot of people's money, as people tend to do there. He also has been the president of the Council for National Policy, an important conservative organization of which I'm proud to be a member. And he's a man who knows his way around these very important public policy issues. We're always delighted to be able to pick his brain. Welcome back, Bill. Good to have you.
Frank, as always. I think you're right on top of the issues. This is a big one.
This is a really big one. Yeah. And Gina Raimondo is the fourth of cabinet officers of the Biden administration who have made what has been described, I think, properly as a pilgrimage to China, to Beijing, to see what she can do to advance the relations, the bilateral relations between our two countries. Talk a bit about what she's up to, Bill, and why we should be very concerned about it.
Well, Gina Raimondo, Commerce Secretary, is making, as you point out, the fourth visit to China among the Biden-level cabinet members, Janet Yellen and Anthony Blinken, and I think our U.S. Trade Representative Catherine.
John Kerry was the fourth cabinet officer.
he's in a cabinet all of his own. Anyway, he was the most egregious apology tour. He went over to promise everything but the kitchen sink if the China would only agree to some climate concessions. Well, anyway, Gina's back acting like she's the Commerce Secretary and it's 1955 and we're trying to sell U.S. goods into China, open up the markets as if the last 50 years haven't happened. She met, I think she's right in the middle of her trip now, and she's already met with some of the ministers there. She's been greeted mainly by low-level officials, and she is trying to advance our interests there commercially, while at the same time really not staring at what the Chinese true intentions are. And what she's come away with, Frank, so far are some agreements from the Chinese simply to meet with us in the future. And they've set up a couple of working groups. One of them is with something involving investment issues, and that's being held at the vice minister level. And then at even a lower level, they've got an export control enforcement agreement working group for assistant secretaries to attend, which means that President Xi of China is taking our trade mission here and saying we're not going to pay the slightest bit of attention. On the other side, the Chinese have refused to come and visit America. I think we, you know, since they lifted the COVID restrictions in 2022, we begged them to come over to the United States to talk about mutual interest, and they won't send anybody. In fact, they're not even returning phone calls.
Bill, let me just dwell on this for a moment, because I'm arguing that this is a national humiliation. Mm-hmm. The Chinese are past masters at trying to use optics and face, as they call it, to, you know, achieve at least propaganda victories, if not actual strategic ones. And the fact that there have been not one, not two, not three, but four of these senior officials, all of whom have had to make this, as I say, these missions to Beijing, in the process, most of them have been treated in a similar fashion. They've been snubbed. They've been relegated to, you know, lower level interlocutors. They've been told to go out and have dinner on the economy. I mean, this is all evidence of the contempt that the Chinese have for us, the Chinese Communist Party, that is. And I think that to the extent that we're making concessions in the face of that, and there are four that in particular I just wanted to run by you, Bill, that Raimondo has done. One of them is this this parleying, as you say, these working groups. Another is that before she even left, she took 27 companies, which we've had reason to be concerned about, Chinese companies, off of something called the Commerce Department's entities list, set of sanctions that thereby were lifted. The administration has agreed to renew a science and technology sharing agreement, which is obviously problematic under present circumstances, which I would argue are the cusp of war, and these guys seeking technological advantage in every way they can. And not least, a signal being sent to investors that they should continue to put money into China. We'll talk a little bit more about whether it's actually investable or not, but this executive order that President Biden promulgated recently, in which he basically pulled the teeth on the restrictions that we were supposedly putting in place for several key technology areas. I mean, all of this is, I think, unmistakably, from the Chinese perspective, evidence that they're going to be continuing to be rewarded for bad behavior and for that matter, contempt towards us. Your thoughts?
Well, I think you put it all pretty well, Frank. I mean, what Janet Yellen went over, and she was treated to a night on the town on an all-expense-paid budget by the party. They wouldn't meet with her in official dinner. Tony Blinken got the kids' table when he met with Xi. He was down, in terms of face, he was like looked like he ranked about 34th in priority and status in the room when they met. And, you know, Gina's trip is continuing in that vein. There's an incredible visual of her, photograph of her at a U.S. trade booth, where she is standing in front of a display, and this is our 10 air, of U.S.-made clean beauty and healthcare products. I mean, this is like asking, you know, countries in central in Africa to fly the pride flag in our State Department embassies. We're living in a different world from Xi. In the meantime, Xi is continuing apace with his cracking down on the Chinese and the Chinese economy. And you know, as you point out, we've been talking about, I declared China investable almost a year and a half ago on this show.
Uninvestable.
Uninvestable. And now, if you're a U.S. company, far from being welcomed in, as Gina's urging people to do it, you can't even get insurance to go into China. There were 2 years ago, there were about 60 insurance companies willing to write political risk insurance if you did business in China. Now, as I understand it, there are only about four companies that are willing to do that.
Whoa.
And that's the limits.
A vote of no confidence, I think, fair to say.
Well, you know, you've got
Bill, hold the thought. We have to take a very short break. We'll be right back with Bill Walton. Hold the thought. Hold the thought. I know you will. We'll come right back with more right after this. Stay tuned. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. As a devastating Hurricane Idalia bears down on Florida's Gulf Coast, the metaphor of a perfect storm should be top of mind. A committee on the Present Danger China webinar will make clear today that a convergence of very dangerous, albeit non-meteorological forces, could put our entire nation at risk. These include a growing number of Biden administration actions that threaten Americans' freedoms and seem calculated to infuriate them. Government agencies have been increasingly weaponized to surveil, control, and prosecute any tempted to respond to apparently deliberate official provocations. Add the recent unopposed illegal immigration of thousands of apparent Chinese special forces, and the stage seems set for attacks here that might be perpetrated by a foreign enemy, but blamed on patriots, instigating a, quote, civil war, unquote, that must then be violently suppressed. You have a need to know. Get briefed at presentdangerchina.org. This is Frank Gaffney. Welcome back. We're visiting with Bill Walton. We're talking about the main thing, China. We're talking specifically about what the Biden administration is doing to reinforce the worst perceptions of the Chinese Communist Party about our, well, shall we say, submissiveness, our kowtowing, as the Chinese put it, to the ascendant power of Communist China. And Bill, you were just about to lay in, I think, to this whole idea that somehow you can actually have normal trade and commercial relations with a country that is preparing for war against you, especially when their doctrine is civil military fusion, which means that everything is basically in the service of their military capabilities. No?
Well, when Gina goes on these trips in the future, she should get a few more briefing books. She evidently has not heard of the term unrestricted warfare and lawfare and economic warfare and kinetic warfare and notions like elite capture. Of course, she probably may be part of the elite.
An exemplary of it. Yeah.
But the idea you can isolate our commercial relationships from everything else, they don't see it that way. They don't act that way. And they're delighted that we seem to be trying to do just that. I've mentioned the insurability of business in China. Well, at this one out of one side of their mouth, they're saying, "Gee, American business and multinationals are always welcome in China." On the other side, they've shut out all the due diligence firms that you need to do business there. They've said they've welcomed in the U.S. Based financial companies, BlackRock, J.P. Morgan, et cetera, yet you look what's actually happened. They're not allowed to do business. They've got an informal arrangement so that they're not welcomed into the underwriting syndicates, and they're not asked, and they're not really selling their mutual fund products. And so while there's been a lot of words, there's no actions on part of Chinese to welcome us in. In fact, just the opposite. If you want to go into business there now, you always would want to find an insurance company to protect your investment. And as I mentioned in the other segment, roughly 50, 55, 60 companies wrote political insurance against risks in China. Now you can only find four or five. And what used to be limits of $2 billion of potential losses, they've now dropped that number to around $50 million. And so the gimlet-eyed financial people are saying, we don't think you ought to be going into China. We're not going to insure it. And if you're going to take risks, you need to take it on your own. Go ahead, Frank.
Yeah. Well, Gina Raimondo is basically saying that's what she's hearing from the companies she's talking to, who are, you know, being encouraged by her to do business in China. It's uninvestable for reasons having to do with the fines that are being levied against them with the...
we don't have much left that China wants. I mean, I mentioned in our webinar, the deal with China and the Chinese Communist Party was, we'll let you come in here and we'll let you bring your business in, but we're going to require an agreement where you share your technology, share your expertise, all your market secrets. And once we've learned all that, then you're out. And not only are you out, but we will have created some businesses to compete directly with you and the rest of the world and in the United States. And they've proceeded industry through industry through industry in the last 20, 25 years. And our cupboard right now is a little bare for the things that Chinese still says they want. We used to say that China was not innovative. They couldn't do science. The artificial intelligence was going to be our bailiwick, biotech, all that sort of thing. They've made tremendous advances. And so the strategic balance.
Partly because we've been training their personnel to.
We handed it to them. I mean, of course we did. And then now I think we're finding ourselves without any leverage. And
well, the other piece of this, Bill, which I think, again, comes back to this point that, are we paying attention to the environment? Xi Jinping is incessantly talking to his people about preparing for war. And one of the things he's actually doing in that respect, it seems, is reducing whatever supply chain dependencies his country has on us. And that may be feeding into the phenomenon that you're talking about, which is
She's paying no attention. The other briefing book she needs is something prepared. Gina, this is what's really happening to the Chinese economy. And what's really happening is that household income has fallen 15%. 15%, Frank, in the last 6 months. The property markets are imploding. Evergrande, which we've been talking about for a couple of years, has now re-entered the public markets, only to see its stock fall 80% in the first day. You know, 75 out of the top 100 property companies in China have seen their stocks implode. The manufacturing sector is down and the export sector is down. The economy, now there are people in China saying, look, we need a bailout.
And that's my concern, Bill.
They said we need something like we got in 1999 and 2000 when they let us into the World Trade Organization. That was a bailout of the Chinese Communist Party. And in fact, there's noise that being made now that they'd like something similar from us. So
this is the precise point. I fear that she actually does have a briefing book that talks about all of those horrible things, and that her purpose, her mission, and that of the Biden administration more generally, is providing precisely that bailout. And Bill, you were, the lead batter in a terrific webinar we did on this very subject last week at the Committee on the Present Danger China. And as always, you can find it at presentdangerchina.org. I strongly commend it to you. We talked about the extent to which sub rosa, stealthily, the Biden administration on the one hand and the Wall Street mavens on the other seem to be trying to figure out how they can, in fact, bail out the Chinese with either our taxpayer funds or, the investment capital of pension funds and mutual funds and so on. And Bill, if China is uninvestable, to say nothing of if China is on a war footing against us, it is insane. And we need a national debate. We need a policy decision to be made here, because at the end of the day, doesn't it really come down to we're propping up our mortal enemy? And there was a great interview, but just last point, if I may, there was a great interview by Mike Gallagher, who is the chair of the House Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party, on Epic Times the other day, the American Thought Leaders Program. Really powerful. We have highlights of it in an article that I did today at American Greatness and also on the Present Danger China website. Bill, this is a moment when Congress needs to engage, it seems to me, and to oppose this bailout very, very directly and very aggressively. Defund it. Your thoughts?
Well, we have to have that debate. And my fear, Frank, is this is going to end up in the inbox with the social media companies where they're trying to stifle debate about what we're doing with China. You saw that we're now no longer allowed to ask questions about the $86 billion of military equipment we left in Afghanistan, nor are we allowed to ask questions about whether we're doing the right thing in Ukraine. I fear that the China lobby is really arguing that we ought not to say bad things about China for fear of being called racist. And what looks like happening with China is they're trying to shove this thing under the rug through the 2024 election so that it doesn't become something that we can hang around their neck as a foreign policy national interest bungle.
Bungle again, is one thing. If it's a strategic defeat of the first order, and unfortunately, Bill, I fear it actually prompts the Chinese to be even more confident that they can use military force, not just against Taiwan, well,
Frank,
but against
the
us.
The thing I'm concerned about is it's just stupidity. I don't, if there's a mastermind in the Biden administration, I've yet to discover who that is.
I think he may be Barack Obama, but that's a subject for another day. Bill, we'll have you back to talk about that next week.
He's my ex-neighbor in Colorado.
Well, there
you can talk about that.
We will. We'll talk to you shortly. Thank you, sir. Next up, Dr. Mark Richards, a fascinating conversation. You're not going to want to miss it. Stay tuned.
Night after night in cities across the country, black-garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
Welcome back. A special welcome to a guest we had the privilege of interviewing some time ago, and we wanted to get back to talk a bit more in detail about the fruits of some of his work. He is, by training and considerable accomplishment, a very, very prominent plastic surgeon in the Washington, D.C. area. He has, however, in the course of, living the Hippocratic Oath, taken up the cause of trying to help people be healthy, not just look good. His name is Dr. Mark Richards. He is the author, among other things, of a book entitled Nobody Wants You Healthy, which is a rather chilling thought. We wanted to explore it with him. He brings to all of this not only a 33-year record of service, as I say, in one of the most I think valued lines of medical activity, but also as a leader in a variety of national and surgical medical societies. And it's always a pleasure to have him with us. Welcome back, Doctor. Good to have you.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to start with the proposition that's in the title of your book. Nobody wants you healthy. Now, we spend God only knows how many billions of dollars every year, if not trillions, on the whole proposition that we're trying to keep people healthy or make them healthy. How is it that you feel that that's not actually what's motivating, among others, I guess, the medical institutions and government agencies responsible?
Well, thank you. Let's look at the numbers. So the numbers are pre-COVID, the U.S. was spending over $2 trillion a year on healthcare. And of that $2 trillion, 80% was going to treat chronic diseases. We have well over 50% of Americans have at least one, if not multiple, chronic diseases. When you're looking at the Medicare population, the over 65 population, 96 cents of every dollar that gets spent in healthcare is for chronic diseases. Now, I like to say this is not a grand conspiracy among all the players that are getting very rich off this. It's just each one acting, at the very least, unethically in maximizing their own profit and showing a total disregard for the health and welfare of the U.S. population. How does this happen? Well, actually, it was an environmental catastrophe that really set the medical industry, particularly pharmacologic industry, as well as the healthcare systems, on the path to riches. In the 60s, we developed plastics. If you remember that movie, The Graduate, where Benjamin gets out of the pool and gets slapped on the back and says, "Plastics, my son, plastics, that's where you got to go."
I have one word for you. Plastics, right?
That's right, one word. Sadly, that one word is coming back to really bite us in the ass, because a chemical in class in plastics called phthalates is the most powerful hormone disruptors we've ever mass produced. So at this point, we manufacture 200 times the toxic dose of phthalates annually for every man, woman, child on the planet.
Now, say that again.
We manufacture 200 times the toxic dose of phthalates for every man, woman, child on the planet.
We manufacture it in a certain period of time, or we have cumulatively done that?
We're doing that every year. We're manufacturing that amount every year. And of course, the phthalates are still in the environment from the manufacture of the previous decade.
They do not break down. They do not
break down very easily at all. So we have microscopic plastic in the air to the point where over 80% of blood samples, if you microfilter them, actually has microscopic plastic in people's blood because it gets absorbed through the little alveoli in your lungs.
Wow. And then there's fish, as I understand it, that are consuming this stuff, and we're consuming them, obviously.
Well, we have all sorts of plastics being dumped in the ocean, and it's killing our marine life. In this area where we live, we have a Chesapeake Bay, a beautiful waterway, and at least three of the rivers have sea bass or rockfish, where 60% of the fish coming into the bay from these rivers are intersex. They're neither male nor female, and they can't reproduce, and it's directly related to the phthalates in the water.
So if it's doing that to fish, it's probably not too good for us either. And is there a direct connection between these phthalates and chronic diseases of various kinds in humans?
Well, that's exactly what I'm circling around to. So you nailed it. If it's not good for fish, it's probably not good for mammals either. And in fact, the hormone that's the most abundant hormone of all humans, their entire life, male or female, and as a matter of fact, the most abundant hormone in most all animals is testosterone. And testosterone plays into this because it's not what the media presents as a sex hormone or a male masculine hormone. It's actually the hormone that controls inflammation and it controls metabolism. So if you become inflamed, guess what you create? Chronic diseases, right?
Which are basically associated with inflammation, as I understand.
All associated with inflammation. So if your testosterone's low, you have a high inflammatory state, which means you're much more likely to have strokes, heart attacks, depression, anxiety, breast cancer, a number of things. And if your metabolic control is out of whack, then you're much more likely to become diabetic and obese. And if you look at the diseases that are afflicting our population that have become epidemic, it's all of those diseases related to inflammation and metabolism. Now, how can that be from this little chemical in plastics? Well, we now know that compared to 1970, men and women's testosterone is less than 40% of what it was back in 1970. We have a 60% reduction.
And the layperson, at least this one, never thinks of women having testosterone at all, let alone that they might have inadequate levels of it. This is having the same effect on them as on men, causing inflammation and inviting all of these diseases associated with it?
Yes. And the reason why people were confused and the medical education process was so wrong was they were looking at blood levels. And it turns out that women make the vast majority of testosterone inside each of their cells, and men make most of it outside of their cells in their testicles, and it gets transported through the blood and transported into the cells. However, we're the same golden retriever. So we both have the ability, male and female, have the ability to make it inside the cell and to make it externally. The problem is phthalates not only can go through and into each cell and disrupt the production of testosterone, they can go across the placenta and affect the fetuses. So now you have fetal damage that changes it, and it's called epigenetics, where it changes the DNA in these animals and it gets passed on to their offspring. So a phthalate exposure from a mother animal now with a newborn inside is going to have grandchildren with defects that were caused by the phthalates that her child was exposed to in utero.
So this gets pretty technical pretty quick, but just to make sure that we're on point here, as I understand it, what you've laid out is if you don't do something about the inflammation and the source of the inflammation, whatever you do to ameliorate or treat the symptoms of the disease is not actually going to spare you the problems associated with the disease. Is that
basically what you're asking? Exactly right. So let's look at one example. Let's look at female menopause. Now, female menopause is a reduction of testosterone to insufficient levels. All the estrogen inside your cells or my cells is made inside the cell from testosterone. The stuff circulating in the bloodstream never gets in the cells and does you much good. So if you have low testosterone, then you and your wife both have menopausal symptoms. And we call it andropause in men and menopause in women. But worse than that, it's a sign of the increased inflammation that your body's having. So you're having plaques put in your arteries, plaques put in your, you know, carotid arteries, your heart arteries. You're having depression, anxiety, irritability as your brain's inflamed. It increases your risk of breast cancer by 40%. You know, you can't control your immune system. And this is a very enriching process for the pharmaceutical industry and for the organized medicine.
Now, you're not suggesting that if you had higher levels of testosterone, you wouldn't have menopause in women or andropause in men, are you? You're just saying that it would be...
That's exactly what I'm telling you. That is exactly what I'm telling you. So when I treat women for menopausal symptoms, what you consider menopausal symptoms, they get a testosterone pellet, like a Tic Tac, put underneath the skin into the fat, and they get 3 months of steady state high levels of testosterone, and their menopausal symptoms are 99% gone. Same for men.
But are they still going through menopause? They're just not having symptoms? Isn't menopause just a natural phenomenon? That
menopause
is the end of that sort of fertile
symptom
cycle?
Well, yeah, menopause is a symptom complex. So menopause is actually the clinical symptoms you experience, whether you're male or female. We just call it andropause in men. And they are caused by low testosterone, inadequate testosterone. Because if your testosterone's inadequate, not only is that hormone down, but you're not making adequate amounts of estrogen either. So you get, for example, osteoporosis or weak bones. As an example of this in men, you know, we didn't see men with osteoporosis and broken hips and those sort of things, you know, until they hit their 80s. Now we're seeing it in their 50s because the testosterone is so low, they can't make enough estrogen in their bones to keep the bones strong.
And this again brings us back to the phthalates that they're being subjected to without any kind of correction. So we have to take a very short break, Dr. Mark Richards. But when we come back, I want to just explore, you know, what do you do about the phthalates as well as what do you do about the hormones? We'll get into all of that and more on the other side of this short break with us. Stay tuned. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. As a devastating Hurricane Idalia bears down on Florida's Gulf Coast, the metaphor of a perfect storm should be top of mind. A committee on the Present Danger China webinar will make clear today that a convergence of very dangerous, albeit non-meteorological forces, could put our entire nation at risk. These include a growing number of Biden administration actions that threaten Americans' freedoms and seem calculated to infuriate them. Government agencies have been increasingly weaponized to surveil, control, and prosecute any tempted to respond to apparently deliberate official provocations. Add the recent unopposed illegal immigration of thousands of apparent Chinese special forces, and the stage seems set for attacks here that might be perpetrated by a foreign enemy, but blamed on patriots, instigating a, quote, civil war, unquote, that must then be violently suppressed. You have a need to know. Get briefed at presentdangerchina.org. This is Frank Gaffney. Welcome back. We're continuing our conversation with Dr. Mark Richards, a highly accomplished plastic surgeon by training and practice, but also a man who has devoted much of his life to figuring out how do you keep people healthy, not just looking like they're healthy. And this brings us to the title of his new book, Nobody Wants You Healthy. And Doctor, you were laying out, I think, a fascinating story of basically what we've done environmentally to our hormones, which is translated into particularly testosterone, being greatly diminished in men and women, resulting in inflammation, which manifests itself in a whole variety of diseases. And the question that occurs is, so what do you do about it? And you've obviously got, with these testosterone pellets, an approach that addresses some of the physical problems with testosterone attrition, shall we say. But you're also, I know, focused on the phthalates problem, the plastics that are the cause of the attacks on the hormones. Is that right?
That's true. One thing I can make people healthier with testosterone pellets, it's been around since 1939 and used to be taught in medical schools until about 1960s when synthetic hormones were created and patented and could enrich the companies. But the problem with phthalates is they don't break down very well, and we need to use a substitute in all these miraculous plastics that we've been developing. And those are more expensive substitutes, but we don't have a choice. We have to do it, or human life and animal life on the planet is really quite in jeopardy. Our infertility rates because of phthalates is skyrocketing.
So there are alternatives to phthalates that would enable plastics to still be valuable to us in a host of ways, but not the environmental nightmare that you've described?
We hope they're not the environmental nightmare. You remember when we ran into plastics, it was fantastic. And then, you know, 15 years later, we started saying, oh my God, what have we done with this? But by then it was too entrenched, and it was benefiting, the powerful forces. You know, the pharmaceutical industry is the largest lobbying donor by a factor of two compared to any other industry in the world. And they make 90% of the $1.4 trillion pre-COVID in revenues, 90% for treating chronic diseases, but never preventing them or curing them. So there's a huge financial incentive both in the industry and in their political recipients, not to stop this money train from going.
But just back to the question on the plastics side, you're saying that these alternatives that avoid the phthalates problem may or may not have problems of their own. We just don't know enough about them at this point.
We are assuming that they don't have the same problems. And, you know, the early studies show they don't have the same problems. But when you start looking at science studies, you really have to repeat them in multiple independent labs, because there's a huge bias in all the science studies. As I say in my book, Nobody Wants You Healthy, over 75% of the science and medical articles in peer-reviewed journals are false, because the authors don't want to be defunded.
And this brings me to Big Pharma and sort of our experience with it in COVID particularly. Talk a little bit about what's been operating in the industry. I mean, obviously the profit motive most especially, but it does seem as though, and our friend Naomi Wolf, Dr. Wolf and her team at Daily Cloud, working with a group from Steve Bannon's posse at War Room, have done unbelievable work exposing not just, I think, the unethical conduct, but the illegal conduct of Pfizer and Moderna in connection with these genetically manufactured so-called vaccines. Just give us a quick appraisal of how much of a problem Big Pharma is itself in all of this.
Well, the baseline of what's been going on with the pharmaceutical industry and NIH and the FDA is one of corruption. Corruption because the money is so huge and the payouts are so good that people look out for their own interest. If you put on top of that the ability of the federal government to usurp any dissent, any scientific discussion, and any way that science is supposed to happen, and then you demand that people not only not discuss it, but that everybody either needs to get on board or get their license pulled if you don't recommend an experimental vaccine, you have a, I would agree with you, illegal situation that totally violated the Nuremberg Code, where we're trying to prevent biological, you know, torture, experimentation, and that sort of thing out of the World War II and Nazi Germany. So it is a horrendous decision that was made. And we have people like, you know, I'm not a huge fan, but Mark Zuckerberg admitting, yeah, we censored people that were telling the truth because, you know, the government can make our job and our company go under. This is a tremendous abuse of power. Now, the FDA is funded partially by taxpayers, but the majority of the budget's by the pharmaceutical industry. And the FDA doesn't have the resources to even hire the statisticians and do a deep analysis of the data that the drug companies are presenting to them for the drugs they want to approve. So they end up de facto just accepting whatever the lawyers for the pharmaceutical industry say the facts are. And this is ridiculous, right? Well, when you know 75% of the research is false.
Yeah, that point that it's false, the point that there's this vested interest in the pharmaceutical industry to perpetrate these frauds, basically. And that the sort of regulatory capture of the FDA has reached a point where, for reasons you've just described, Dr. Richards, they're wholly owned subsidiaries, it seems, of the pharmaceutical concerns, giving rise to a situation in which we're now seeing, it seems, these latest boosters and vaccines being approved without, I think, even mice being subjected to them for any length of time, for heaven's sakes. I mean, it's really chilling. And I think there's been such a complete erosion of confidence in the public health authorities and you know, this complex, as it's called. People have different names for it. But it really does, I think, argue powerfully for the kind of wake-up call that you're offering here with your book, Nobody Wants You Healthy. We're going to talk more about it on the other side of a very short break. Stay tuned. Be right back. We're back, and we're visiting a little bit further with Dr. Mark Richards, a celebrated plastic surgeon, but a man who I think is now earning a very important reputation for leadership as well, in the whole idea that we could be healthier than we are if we weren't simply encouraged and in some ways, I guess, compelled to treat just the symptoms of disease rather than the underlying causes. And Dr. Richards, we were talking a bit about Big Pharma and its role, its self-interested role, resulting in at least, it would appear, a lot of unethical behavior, if not downright criminal conduct, notably in the COVID crisis. But from what you're saying, it seems their vested interest in selling us symptomatic treatments for everything without actually mitigating the underlying chronic diseases or the causes thereof. Talk just a little bit further about how, as a nation, we are going to have to come to grips with this. You've mentioned the possibility of coming up with alternative plastics, for example, that might help. You've talked about a specific treatment, course of treatment, testosterone pellet therapy. First of all, what is the way forward there, and how can people learn more about both?
Well, I think the way forward is multi-pronged. People need to avoid as much as possible their exposure to phthalates. So a water filtration system that takes out the plastics from your water is a very good start, since 98% of U.S. tap water has plastic in it. Making sure your food doesn't touch plastic, you don't cook it in plastic, that's another very good start. Trying to stay away from processed food, because phthalate lines cans, because it makes things flow smoothly. So, you know, frozen foods, foods in brown bags, foods wrapped by your butcher, those sort of things would be a really good start. Having exercise, and also have your testosterone and estrogen levels measured to make sure that, you know, you are in a decent balance. The lab levels can't be trusted because they're have dropped down as the population has dropped down. So the lab levels range that they say is not really the ideal. It just happens to be the range of a very sick population. So the doctors need to be educated about what a proper level is to reduce disease.
Fascinating. And to the extent that there is, let's just put it charitably, misconduct on the part of the pharmaceutical companies, you mentioned earlier the fact that the leverage they've got over the docs, directly or indirectly, leading in some cases to people losing their certification to practice medicine if they are championing, you know, lower cost therapeutics, for example, for COVID, instead of, you know, these experimental, very expensive, very dangerous, it seems, vaccines. What can we do about the power of Big Pharma in all of this?
You know, as one of my friends said, if Congress would do its job, we would be better off. But you have to remember that these Congress people on both sides of the aisle are making millions of dollars personally by getting inside information about what blockbuster drug is about to get approved and then pressuring the FDA to approve them. You know, it's a very corrupt system. So my point in my book was I wanted to educate my fellow colleagues who are trying to do their best but totally misinformed, and the public. Because if the public demands it and my colleagues are educated, we can change things. But that's what it's going to take. It's going to take a groundswell, basically revolution, in order to change the way things are done.
Do you see in your colleagues a willingness to take the risks that are associated with that kind of groundswell, sir?
Yes, I don't think they're quite as outspoken in this message as I am, but they all are doing it privately with their patients. So there is a much bigger educational process going on than the government or pharma understands. When I wrote this book, it took quite a while because I had to document every single thing I said with good science studies that prove my point, so that I wasn't considered some hack that they could easily dismiss. When they try to dismiss it, you know, certain medical society groups, I said, read the book. They read the book. They're like, okay, you're right.
Well, and when 75% of the studies are wrong, But you obviously had to do a lot of culling there. Let me, in closing, sir, just ask you about a factor in all of this that I'm very worried about that may make it even more difficult for us in the future to have the kind of public health quality and conduct that we need. And that is, we're at the cusp, as I'm sure you know, of allowing an entity called the World Health Organization not only to provide advice about how we contend with medical crises of various kinds, but actually to dictate to us when we have one or when we potentially will have one and what we will do about them. And I think our experience with COVID was bad enough with these guys. What must we do to, as you see it, ensure we do not surrender our personal medical sovereignty as well as our national sovereignty to some unaccountable agency like the World Health Organization?
Excellent question. When I first heard what they were planning to do, I was terrified. But when I sat back and thought a little more rationally about it, as long as the judicial system, the Supreme Court, stays the course, and we get a complete change in the executive administrative branch, this sort of thing will never happen. You know, the World Health Organization is run by an former economics minister from an African country. You know, he had no basis in science, but a lot of basis in how in corruption and how to make money. And the people on the board—
And Marxism, by the way. Yeah.
And the people on the board of the World Health Organization are the ones that were funding Peter Daszak, were funneling the money from DOD and NIH to the Wuhan lab. So, I mean, it's just a totally corrupted organization. You know, dictators want total control, and that's what tyranny is. And if we can toss out the executive branch and maybe educate Congress and keep the judiciary system honest, I think the Constitution and the Bill of Rights will completely block any attempt from the World Health Organization to dictate anything to U.S. citizens.
Those are big ifs, sir. And we've got to do everything we can, I think, to stave this off, lest any of them fail to eventuate. But thank you for your incredible work in all of this and for coming back and telling us more about it. I hope you'll do so again in the near future, sir. This is vital.
That'd be great.
I've learned a lot myself, and I'm sure our audience has as well. God bless you, Dr. Mark Richards. We'll be right back with, no, we won't. We're going to say goodbye. Thank you for joining us for this edition of Securing America. I hope you come back for more next time. Until then, go forth and multiply.